You are listening to The News Project for the week of June 3rd, 2019, brought to you by GNAT TV. This week's episode features stories about floodproofing and environmental concerns stalling plans for redeveloping the Manchester Shopping Center, and the process of purifying water for reuse.
More than 4.5 years have passed since the town of Manchester approved a plan for the redevelopment of the Manchester Shopping Center Plaza off of Depot Street shortly before Christmas of 2014. An Act 250 permit application was filed shortly afterwards, and a permit eventually issued in February of 2016. But all was not yet over. The Act 250 permit required an amended approval from the town and was obtained last December. Plans to mitigate flood hazard concerns and floodproofing the buildings were one concern. The developer, Crosspoint Associates, arrived at a plan that won town approval with a redesigned facade on the grocery store structure in December of 2018. But that has not led to a follow-up approval from the Vermont Department of Environmental Conservation's Rivers Program, which is charged with protecting and restoring natural river and floodplain processes to enhance water quality, ecological health, and flood resilience. The proximity of the West Branch of the Battenkill, which flows past the western side of the plaza, brings this project into their purview. According to town officials, the Rivers Program staff has asked for 4 extensions to review the revised project between last December and early February, only to conclude information submitted so far was insufficient for them to provide review. And since then, there's been no further movement on the permit. Town Manager John O'Keefe explained where things stood at the moment.
There's been some permitting back and forth at the state level. The town permits went through, and right now it's kind of stuck in Act 250. We're working closely with the project proponents, Crosspoint, and the State Agency of Natural Resources. We're trying to broker a solution that works for the project developer and for the state. Right now, we're just sort of working between those two groups. You know, it is an important project for the community. You know, it's a streetscape element, and also you know, the addition of a second grocery store in town. Is pretty important to the area and to the Manchester community. It comes down to floodproofing the building. I mean, there's some floodproofing issues. The challenge that we have is actually any idea of renovating the current plaza actually environmentally is not as good of a plan based on where the pavement is and the propane tanks and other things like that. The new layout, river-wise, I think is a much stronger plan. So even when it comes to river management, you know, I see the benefits of the new project versus maintaining the old plaza.
Plans submitted at Town Hall call for the existing V-shaped structure to be reconfigured. The wing of the building where the art gallery start space is located and extending down to where the Olympia Sports Shop used to be will remain as is. But the other wing, extending from the present Price Chopper supermarket to the Village Cinema, would be torn down, and a new building with a larger footprint, extending into the area behind the existing building, would be constructed. The building that used to house a bowling alley years ago would be demolished and torn down. A retaining wall would be constructed into the slope of the hill behind the existing structure. Billy Koster, of the state's Agency of Natural Resources, of which the Department of Environmental Conservation is a part, explained where things stood from their perspective.
Well, first, I'd like to say that, you know, our agency is supportive of the project. We think, you know, in speaking with the town, this is something that's important to the community. So we want to certainly help move the process forward. What is currently holding things up is the fact that we believe for the Act 250 process to move forward, the project needs to provide detailed plans, design plans, to show how the building will be floodproofed from floodwaters. And this is part of the review that Act 250 does under their floodways criteria, criteria 1D, and it's intended to both protect environmental impacts associated with flooding and public safety, the costs of insurance and public investment in buildings after they're flooded, and a whole suite of different values. And in this case, and as with others, when buildings are located within the FEMA floodplain, there's an expectation that those buildings will be floodproofed, basically designed and built in a way that if floods come, they can be sealed up from the outside to try to keep the interiors of the buildings dry. And in this case, the project's consultants has done an analysis of that floodproofing, but the project has yet to provide a written set of design plans or an affirmative commitment of which of the options your consultant has identified they will actually implement for the project. So at this point, we really just need them to take that menu of options that their consultant has developed, commit to pursuing certain of those options, and then draw up a set of plans, design plans, that we can review to make sure that the options they've chosen are actually feasible for their project design. So it's somewhat a formality, but it's an important one. We want to make sure that the strategies that they've pursued to address floodproofing are ones that can actually work at the building, work at the site. So to move this forward, we had a good conversation with folks from the town. Yesterday, we're going to reach out to the project development team, and we hope that we can walk them through specifically how to bring that analysis of floodproofing strategies forward to an implementable set of design plans. We think that's a relatively straightforward task. My sense is that there may have been some miscommunication or some confusion amongst our staff, the project, the town, that's led to a little bit of this bottleneck, and our hope is once we start talking directly, we can resolve it quickly and get the project moving again.
Kerry McCormick of Crosspoint Associates, the developers of the project, said in an email that, quote, it would have been helpful to have been allowed some interim level of building detail to allow the permits to be issued subject to additional floodproof design. That would have allowed us to have signed the lease with a grocer and move forward with the remaining design details for their input, unquote. He added later in a subsequent email that because of the delays, we've had to look at alternative options to the redevelopment. At the moment, there is apparently no signed lease with a grocer amid the uncertainty over the final floodproofing plans. According to the minutes from the Manchester Development Review Board's meeting on December 5th, 2018, McCormick, who was present at the meeting, shared plans for a revised design of the building's facade and said he hoped to get construction started in April 2019. For the GNet TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever. Ever wonder what happens to the water that drains down your kitchen sink or shower? If you live in a town large enough to require a public sewer and municipal water system, like Manchester, that water is collected and eventually finds its way to the town's water treatment facility, where it's gradually purified and returned back for use. Most of that happens almost invisibly, and the techniques in place to make sure the water is decontaminated work so well and reliably that it seems almost automatic. But a lot goes on behind the scenes to make it so, and on Thursday, May 30th, the blinds were pulled away a bit for Water Day in Manchester to give the public a close-up look at how the municipal water system actually works. There's a lot more to it than you think, and it works with a combination of technology and Mother Nature. Eric Severance, the town's water and sewer superintendent, takes us for a tour.
This is our office lab, command central, if you will. We have our file storage. We have a small laboratory where we have to daily monitoring that we have to do on the sewer treatment process, and a little tiny bit on the drinking water. We have chlorine residual, dissolved oxygen is that device. This is a pH and a temperature device. This is what we call settleable solids, which are all daily testing that we do throughout the treatment process in several spots. At the effluent, at the end of each of the primary and secondary lagoon, and at the headworks where it enters the plant. This device here is also, happens to be in here, this is the, this continually monitors the chlorine in the drinking water system.
The facility handles an average of 300,000 gallons of water a day from both the town and the village.
Sometimes we can get down to around 2 to 250. High spring runoff or our high groundwater situations, we can get upwards of 400,000 to 500,000. Big rainstorms, as compared to these last couple floods we had, it went up above 1 million gallons a day for those couple days. Everybody who's connected to town water and sewer, or sewer, I should say, it comes here. From here, this is just, I'll show you the beginning of the process. Okay, this is what we call the headwork. This is the beginning of the treatment process at the plant. The raw sewage is entering the plant right here. There's two pipes. Pipe is coming from the village. The larger diameter pipe is coming from the center, which is a pumping system that will come on, it comes on every 5 to 10 minutes. So there's nothing coming out of it now, but it will come. Okay. It goes through what we call a bar rack. And then this solids will settle out. Some of the heavier solids will settle out. And this is the next step is the combinator, which grinds up solids that have gotten through the process. So from here it just leaves the headwork process and goes out of the lagoon, the primary lagoon. And from here the treatment process is very simple. You just hold it in a pond, you give it air, and Mother Nature does the rest. The same exact thing happens in all rivers and waterways. Mother Nature has bacteria that works on solids and breaks them down. And that's all we just hold the water and give it time and let it do its thing.
The wastewater will spend about 90 days in each lagoon before it's ready to be returned for consumption again.
This is what we call our blower building, and these large square boxes you see are our blowers, which all they are electric motors driving big air pumps, supplying air through this piping. We only run them one at a time. We have multiple for breakdown reasons or maintenance reasons. Goes through the air piping, and there's two pipes going down into the floor that one goes to each lagoon. So they're leading out to these lagoons, and you can see the bubbles coming up in the lagoons. And that is the key to the whole process. Mother Nature's bacteria does the work for us. They feed on oxygen. They need the oxygen to do their work for us. So we have to maintain the oxygen in the lagoons for that reason. And that's the biggest, most important part of the treatment process besides the chlorination in our treatment process, which our treatment process is very simple and easy to maintain compared to larger industrial communities who have more complicated wastewater treatment because of their waste is much more more harmful and needs more treatment. Part of this is called the transfer structure. This is just a structure that transfers the flow from the primary lagoon to the secondary lagoon. Hand wheels you see are valves that we can redirect flow for maintenance reasons. Normally it's just going straight through from coming in this one and going out that one, but if we need to bypass either lagoon, these other two are bypasses so that we can bypass the flow around the lagoon while we maintenance it. All built into the plant for maintenance reasons, which are very handy sometimes.
From there, we headed over to the second lagoon.
This is almost as clean as your average, if you had a pond in your backyard, a fish pond in your backyard, because it's not drinking water.
Ah, okay.
And neither would you do that in your backyard pond. But this pond has fish, we have wildlife, we have turtles, we have several species of ducks and geese that we see here regularly, and raptors. The primary lagoon does about 80% of the treatment, and this polishes it, or the secondary treatment. So,
all right.
This is what we call the chlorine contact chamber. We inject chlorine into at the beginning of it. It comes into this structure and And the purpose of this structure is to retain the flow while the chlorine does its job. We have to inject chlorine as part of our discharge permit requirements. And that kills the pathogens before it goes to the river. It comes out of the chlorine contact chamber here, and then we inject another chemical called sodium bisulfite to take the chlorine out before it enters the river. It enters this structure, which is a flow monitoring structure, its sole purpose. We monitor the flow all the time and report how much is coming through the plant. All we do is measure the level over that V-notch weir, and that's how much we know how much the flow is coming through the plant.
Then from there, it's back to the Battenkill River.
You can't really see it, but the discharge is a large, probably 16 or 24-inch pipe sticking up in the bottom of the river right there. I know where to look. It's kind of a darkish spot right there.
From rainfall from the sky to a flowing river, water is used and used again. But having the modern convenience of water on demand requires a lot of infrastructure many of us don't see or even think much about. But it doesn't happen automatically. For the GNAT TV News Project, I'm Andrew McKeever.
Thanks for listening local. For more local content, visit gnat.tv.